Welcome to Onward, the Forum Families Forward podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about trauma and how it impacts our children, our families, and school environments. We have two guests for this episode. The first is Beth Spivak. Can you tell us about yourself, Beth?
I am married with two children. My daughter was adopted from Ethiopia as an infant, and I have worked in therapeutic foster care. I've worked at Forum Families Forward for several years, and I have an MSW in social work.
And our second guest is Angela Tanyacharan. Can you give us your background, Angela?
I am an immigration attorney in Alexandria, Virginia. I am married to New for 25 years. We met 26 years ago at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, where we were both stationed. I have a biological son, age 19, who has an intellectual disability and attends his local high school. I have my twin nieces, who I refer to as my daughters, who are my brother-in-law's children, age 17, who are juniors at the same local high school. We have been their foster kinship parents since October 2018. We are currently in the adoption process in the state of Florida. Previously, we were foster parents in 2010 for 2 years in Virginia. We did respite care as foster parents.
So, Beth, one of the most serious problems for foster, kinship, and adoptive families is trauma and how it affects the child. It's probably best if we start off with an explanation of what trauma is.
So trauma is an event, series of events, or set of circumstances that is experienced by an individual as physically or emotionally harmful or life-threatening with lasting adverse effects on the individual's functioning and mental, physical, social, emotional, and/or spiritual well-being. How someone responds to the event, events, or circumstances is personal and dependent on a variety of factors, such as individual, family, environmental, risk, and protective factors. So for example, two children who experience the same event may respond in different ways. One may recover quickly without significant distress, while the other may be unable to process the event and experience it as being traumatic.
What are some of the causes of trauma, and can you give an overview of the term adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs?
There are many causes of trauma. A few are physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, neglect, parental separation, or domestic violence. Also, living in a dangerous neighborhood or racism can be classified as traumas because those circumstances impact one's sense of safety. ACEs is the acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences. Research that began in the 1990s showed that the more ACEs a child experiences, the more likely that child is to suffer from poor mental and physical health outcomes later in life. ACEs increase the risk for heart disease, obesity, depression, substance abuse, and ultimately early death. ACEs can overactivate the child's stress response system, wearing down the body and brain over time. This overactivation is referred to as toxic stress and is the primary way in which adversity damages a child's development and well-being.
And then how does trauma impact a child's ability to function at home? And what about school?
A child with a history of trauma can become easily triggered and dysregulated in any situation, including at home or in school. The child is in survival mode, which means fight, flight, or freeze, and that response is taken over. The child cannot access his or her prefrontal cortex, which is the thinking part of the brain that's responsible for impulse control and higher level thinking. This lack of control can lead to inappropriate behaviors that do not meet behavioral expectations. People, including caregivers and teachers, mistakenly believe the child is willfully misbehaving when the child is really just in survival mode.
So, Angela, how did trauma impact your child's behavior and ability to function at home? And then what about at school, too? Have things changed over the years?
Trauma shows up differently for each daughter, but it affects them in the same areas. Trauma impacted their daily routine from beginning in the morning until the end of the day at bedtime. For example, they have trouble waking up at the same time daily for school, as well as having trouble falling asleep and remaining asleep. Because of this, they awake in bad moods and act out in the morning before they leave school. They have severe mood swings, which affect their behaviors and their ability to coexist in a peaceful family environment. They also have trouble communicating their wants and needs in an effective manner. Therapy and medication helps with these areas. At school, the school environment affects their mood. They both suffer from social anxiety. They have trouble reading social cues. Their takeaway seems to be an extreme negative conclusion to the perceived situation.
So did you get much help from your school and the teachers, or was this more of a behavioral issue that they felt was your responsibility?
It takes a village to raise children, and I called on my village. The school has always been a great support system for us. When the girls first moved to Virginia in 2018, I asked the school for therapy services. They sent us to a therapist in the community for 10 free sessions. Afterwards, we found another therapist who took our insurance. Also, the school psychologist, school counselor, and school social worker are aware of our situation at home and provide support to them as well. I have received phone calls and emails providing ongoing support from the school staff. The girls have a handful of favorite teachers who go above and beyond the call of duty and support the girls during the day if an issue crops up or if they just need to take a break from the cafeteria.
So Beth, we're entering the holiday season, and we know holidays can be especially challenging for foster, adoptive, and kinship families that are caring for children with trauma. Do you have any suggestions for making the holiday season less stressful?
Yeah, I do have some suggestions. The first would be try to stick to a routine as much as possible. And I know this is really difficult because you may be traveling, you may have family in town, you may have guests, but to the extent that you can, try to stick to a routine, especially around bedtime. And if you can't stick to a routine, or if the environment's going to change because you're at a friend's house or a hotel, then give a lot of advance notice about the changes, talk about them, and try to practice them if you can. Another suggestion is that foster, adoptive, and kinship children have been removed from their birth families, and this separation can lead to a profound sense of loss, especially around the holidays. So it's great if you can connect these children to people that are important to them, such as birth relatives, neighbors, teachers, or other important people. However, that's not always possible to do. So you should always give the child the opportunity to express how he or she feels about not being in touch with important people or people that they love. Normalize those feelings. Let them know that it's okay to feel sad and validate however they feel. Another thing that you can do is, whenever possible, incorporate the child's religious and cultural customs into your celebrations. You can also do that with past family traditions. You can incorporate them into your traditions. So you can cook familiar foods or have familiar decorations, anything that makes them feel connected. And then lastly, if you're going to exchange presents, make sure that you give the child a present that he or she really wants, because it makes that child feel important and that they've been heard.
So, Angela, do you have any tips for making the holidays less stressful and more enjoyable?
We always discuss the next day's events the night before, or even a few days before in some cases. Discuss Thanksgiving now, and at Thanksgiving, discuss Christmas. And at Christmas, discuss New Year's. This cuts down on the anxiety. They are still adjusting to the whole concept of what it means to be a family and what families do during the holidays. We cook, eat, and spend time together.
All righty. So, Beth, in addition to the holidays, we're still dealing with the uncertainties of the COVID pandemic. And with that change, there's been additional stresses and worries. How has that impacted the families you're dealing with?
Our families, in some cases, are dealing with unique stressors and worries. Visits with birth families have been canceled or have different parameters. They can be virtual now. You might be wearing masks, or there's a lack of human contact because you can't touch each other. So sometimes younger kids can't hug their birth parents, and that's confusing. Internationally adopted children are worried about their birth families because they're living in developing countries and there's a lack of access to vaccines and medical care. Financial stress due to job loss and lack of daycare options has been an issue for many people. However, kinship caregivers such as grandparents or aunts or uncles or older siblings, may have been struggling financially before the pandemic because they hadn't planned on the expense of raising children, COVID has just exacerbated a difficult situation. There are also academic challenges and school stressors due to COVID. There has been a lack of consistency between in-person and virtual schooling, and there are learning gaps. And these learning gaps are common in this population because many children and youth have special needs. These issues are especially difficult to manage because many of these children have histories of trauma. But in some cases, like in Angela's case, sometimes virtual learning has been good for kids with histories of trauma because it gives them the opportunity to learn at home and makes them feel safe.
All right. So, Angela, how has the pandemic affected the anxiety in your family?
We discuss the facts and myths. They know more myths than I do. Teens at the high school seem to have additional myths than what is broadcast on the news or in print. So we use it as an opportunity to learn from each other. Education and facts seem to decrease the anxiety. I remember one of my teens telling me she was not returning to school after COVID. But after many discussions and listening to her concerns and how to overcome them, she felt more comfortable about not only returning to school, but also getting both vaccines. They are diligent about wearing their masks. I do not have to ask anymore. But at one point in the summer, we had about a week or two when one of my teens was being defiant and about wearing her mask. But then a mask mandate helped her change her mind because she understood why there was such a rule. So education and facts helped ease anxiety in my family.
Well, if there are going to be more shutdowns, Beth, or other changes in the pandemic continues, what are some of the tips and practices that families can implement ahead of time to help their kids with coping through these times?
Again, keep to a routine as much as possible. It really helps kids with a history of trauma know what to expect. For younger kids, limit access to news because it can become overwhelming to process. Depending on the chronological or developmental age of the child, limit access to social media as well, if appropriate. Have regular check-ins. Make sure there's open communication. Even if the worries seem small, validate and normalize feelings.
All right. And how can caregivers support children during this challenging time? What does the phrases looking behind the behaviors mean, and how does that work?
All behaviors driven by a need. That need is also what makes the behavior functional for the child, even when the behavior itself can be undesirable or harmful. You can support a child by checking in and asking questions in a compassionate manner. Listen carefully without interrupting. Summarize the child's statements in a supportive manner and ask if you understand correctly. It's really important just to validate the child's thoughts and feelings. Also, explore strategies that can be helpful for self-regulation. Strategies include finding a safe place for the child to go if the child feels dysregulated, using calming techniques such as breathing or even blowing bubbles. Keep in mind that all strategies need to be practiced a lot when kids are calm so they can be used when kids are stressed or dysregulated. Learning cannot happen when a child's brain is in that fight, flight, or freeze mode because they cannot access that thinking part of their brain. So it really is important to practice strategies before the child becomes dysregulated.
All right. And how can caregivers collaborate with the schools to create a safe environment for the learning during this challenging time?
Reach out proactively to teachers and share strategies that work with your child. You can share triggers and how to avoid them. Make sure there are consistent expectations between home and school. Regular open communication with the school or teachers is helpful. For instance, the teacher can send quick updates to let you know what kind of day the child had, or you can let the teacher know if the child had a difficult morning, because that will probably impact the child's ability to self-regulate at school, which will impact the child's behavior and ability to learn. Depending on the chronological age or developmental age of the child can also express his or her own needs. This will give the child a sense of agency and control. Lastly, trauma-informed IEPs or 504s can be helpful.
So there are strategies and methods on building connections to prevent problems. Can you give us some details on how they work?
Children with trauma histories can be triggered by all sorts of sensory input. Be aware of your own physical presence, tone of voice, volume, and body language. For instance, if you touch a child who's been physically or sexually abused, that may trigger the child even if your intent was to promote a sense of safety or be reassuring. Use neutral body language and a calm voice. Create predictable structure and stick to it. Again, routines are very helpful.
So, Angela, have you used any of these strategies and how have they impacted your children?
My husband and I each have our own therapists who teach us evidence-based strategies like the ones that she just suggested. My daughters have an in-home and outpatient therapist. Time to time, we have family therapy as well. We look at the behaviors and we look behind the behaviors and we implement these evidence-based strategies to affect change. And we have seen results. These little wins keep us going.
And have you shared these strategies with your children's schools and have the strategies been implemented?
Fairfax County Public Schools provides a special education conference and a mental health awareness and addiction conference with INOVA every year. And I attend these conferences. This particular school seems to understand trauma and addiction. I have had many discussions with the school staff about challenging behaviors that sometimes spill over into the school environment. They implement solutions and provide follow-up. They are a good support system, and I appreciate it.
All right. And there's a definite need for school and family collaboration. How were you able to work with your school on building a communication channel that was able to help?
I took the courage to reach out to the school for help. The more wraparound support I had for my daughters meant they would remain in our home, and we would make it to the final phase of adoption. I had to overcome my fear of others knowing my business or airing dirty laundry. But we need support at home and at school. I do not want the school to fail, suspend, or expel my daughters because of their trauma. There are ways to prevent this. So it is important that they know who we are and what we need from the school in order for my daughters to succeed, given their trauma history. I email and I call the school staff and the teachers. If I do not get a response within 24 hours, I think about visiting the front office, but because of COVID, I just send another email or call again, letting them know that it's my second time. This is what advocacy looks like for my girls.
And for any parents who are new to the situation, what would you say to them that's the key factor they should always keep in mind?
There is hope. It does get better. Healing is a process. Everyone will not understand your situation. I cannot tell you how many times I heard the phrase, they are just teenagers. We cannot ignore the trauma. So surround yourself with a good support system. I am supported by my mother, my sister, my therapist, my husband's therapist. The girls' outpatient and inpatient therapists support us, and we can text them at any time. The social workers in Florida and Virginia support us, and several key school teachers and staff, my church, and this organization, FFF, Formed Families Forward. You do not have to do this alone. They are not the same girls, but neither am I. There is wisdom in trauma.
So Beth, where can parents find more help with all this?
I think Angela did a good job about talking about resources. So I would say school counselor or school social worker, private therapists that are especially knowledgeable about trauma. At FFF, we have peer support groups for both caregivers and young adults and teenagers. On our website, we have videos and tip sheets on understanding trauma and trauma-informed schools. Also, there's a resource directory which provides information and contact information for organizations, services, and resources for children, youth, and families.
For more information, visit formfamiliesforward.org and go to the resources page. You'll find several links to fact sheets, presentations, and other resources on trauma and trauma-sensitive schools. This has been Onward, the podcast of Form Families Forward, produced by Form Families Forward of Northern Virginia and Blazing Kiss Media. Thanks for listening.